You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The heat of summer is finally in the rearview mirror, and the rainy season is once again upon us, which does come with the risk of flooding. This is especially true in places like Sacramento, which is one of the most flood-prone areas in the country. There have been a lot of developments and construction in low-lying areas or historic floodplains that are at greater risk when the waters rise. And while projects are underway to help shore up protection across the area, like upgrades, some of these efforts are running into setbacks and opposition. With winter right around the corner, we're going to take stock of what flood control looks like in the region and what the potential risks might be. Joining us now is Jeffrey Mount with the Water Policy Center at the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California, or PPIC. Welcome back, Jeffrey.
Nice to be back.
So Sacramento has been called one of the most at-risk cities and areas in the country from river flooding. I mean, it's been compared to New Orleans, especially after Hurricane Katrina. So just to give us some more clarity, and aside from being located, of course, by two major rivers, the Sacramento and the American, what makes this area just so vulnerable?
So it's a number of things. I mean, first of all, this might not have been the smartest place to put a city when you think about it, right at the confluence between these two rivers, the American River and the Sacramento River, in watersheds that respond very quickly to the atmospheric rivers that roll in here. So the waters rise very quickly, and historically, as the Native American communities knew really well when they lived here, when that happened, they moved. And so they just went to higher ground. And instead, we insisted on developing on that low ground. So our biggest challenge is we have made, over the last 100 plus years, a series of land use decisions that we now have to live with. And that is what you are seeing going on around us, is how to basically manage floods and to deal with our flood risk in this area. Where we have made some bad, I've been on your show in the past where I said one of the big mistakes we made was developing Natomas. That is a low-lying area. It's very low. It's extremely high risk when they first started developing it, and probably wasn't a good place to build. Mm-hmm. But we're building there. And so you have to live with the reality on the ground and make these adjustments. And that's what's going on here. We have to adapt to this rapid rise and fall. And God, back years ago in 1955 when they built Folsom Dam, we thought they announced to Sacramento, we've solved your flood problem. Oops, no, you didn't. In many ways, actually, Folsom made it worse because people went ahead and built out onto the floodplain thinking everything was fine, only to discover that Folsom is just simply too small.
It's about a million acre feet.
Yeah, it seems immense, but for the kind of flood control they tried to do with it, it's not working. So instead, we have these thousands of miles of levees. We have weirs. And of course, we use the Yellow Bypass as a place to store and transmit floodwaters. And then we have these reservoirs. And so all this is a very complicated engineering system to try and reduce flood risk.
You've said this on the show before, that the disaster memory half-life is short. I mean, you mentioned that, you know, when during the gold rush, people started building here. I mean, they experienced flooding. I mean, you can go on a tour along the waterfront in Old Sacramento and learn all about it. But it's happened recently from 1986 to 97 to 2006, to even 2017. What has changed in that time? Is flood control more robust now than in the years or decades since, even with climate change?
So, Vicky, you and I have laughed before when we've talked about this. And my nickname is Dr. Doom because I'm constantly raising the alarm about these things. By the way, it was Tamara Keith that gave me that nickname, which I wear with honor. But what I want to say, particularly to your listeners, you know, there's 500,000, there's 500,000 people here who are at risk of flooding, 120,000 structures, billions of dollars of investment. At the same time, after Hurricane Katrina, there was a giant wake-up, particularly here in the Central Valley and in the legislature, and that has been a sustained effort providing. I have to look at the key people who have been there, and the Sacramento Area Flood Control Agency showed extraordinary leadership and courage. Your local representative, both Matsuis, ended up being ferocious advocates for trying to tackle the flood control problems here. And so I have to say is, normally I'm pretty critical about this stuff. I am not. critical of Sacramento's efforts. They have put in billions of dollars in partnership with the federal government in particular. Sacramentans have done something that Californians don't do very often. They taxed themselves to help pay for this. You know how hard it is to get that done today? But the people of Sacramento did this. And now you have a much, much more robust flood control system than you did right after Hurricane Katrina, when the national headlines were Sacramento, the next Hurricane Katrina. And in that time, there's been huge advances in that regard. And they should celebrate that. Still got a ways to go, but you really should celebrate the progress that's been done in this area.
Do you think that a majority of people, you know, the 500,000 that you're talking about, should have flood insurance?
Oh, boy. It's great you're talking about it. And I skipped over the fact that, the flood memory half-life, I was here in 97. That was pretty scary. I was here in 86. That was very scary. That was such a near miss. That would have been billions of dollars, and who knows how many hundreds of people would have died in 86 mm-hmm. had it rained that hard for another 20 minutes. It was that close. We just missed. I haven't forgotten that. That's because I'm a professional that works on that kind of stuff. Everybody else seems to have forgotten it, except the people who manage flood control. Now, that's one of the problems, by the way, with floods, mm-hmm. is because they're short-lived and they're over quickly, and then 9 months later, people have forgotten about it, which is actually a real scientifically it is scientifically relevant because they've noticed that, which is, I keep telling people, is why I have two children instead of one. That was a disaster. Well, I forgot. So one of the things here that has come up again and again is this disaster memory half-life, and then risk perception is such a problem in flood management. You build these beautiful levees. They're really not beautiful. I mean, these big, hulking, gray infrastructure levees to hold back the rivers, and people think they're safe, and they're not. If you live on a floodplain behind a levee, you are at risk, period. People argue about it all over time, how much risk you have. But there's this other number called residual risk. They'll calculate basically what your risk is based on the existing infrastructure that you have. And then there is this residual risk when it fails. And I know it makes engineers crazy when I say it, but there are two kinds of levees in this system, those that have failed and those that will fail. You know, eventually, these things are undone. Take a look at the Mississippi River as your classic example. I mean, massive floodworks, and most of them have failed in some point in the past. I mean, nature bats last in all of this. So if you live on that area that's got a blue color on it, which, you know, there's various maps that you can look at. You can actually go on the Army Corps of Engineers page and look at sort of the area where they're modifying Folsom Dam, the area of interest, and look in there. If you're in there, you should have flood insurance.
But premiums are going up.
They are. And there's this other very disturbing wrinkle. We don't really know what the federal government's going to do about it. But when those of us get out and grind away on how to manage floods and reduce risk, we always come to the same conclusion. The best risk management you can do is having a good emergency evacuation system and flood insurance. Those are the two best things that can be done. And you, as an individual homeowner, can take the initiative right there. You don't have to wait for the government. But we are very worried about what's happening at the federal level in the future of the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the National Flood Insurance Program. And all I can say is we're suffused with uncertainty right now. We don't really know what's going to happen.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Jeffrey Mount from the PPIC about the state of flood control and risks around the Sacramento region. Okay, so we have thousands of miles of levees across the Sacramento Valley, and they do need repair and upkeep, and that can come with controversy. I mean, on the topic of levees, the Army Corps of Engineers, they've been working on several projects in the region, including upgrading the levee along the American River Parkway. That has drawn opposition, even lawsuits from some residents and conservation groups about plans to remove hundreds of trees to make improvements. How do you strike the right balance between flood control and natural or historic preservation?
Well, this is one of the problems of the way we developed Sacramento. We decided to put our levees right up against the river. And modern levee management and design doesn't do that. You set those levees back as far as you possibly can to have those natural areas which become parks, recreation, et cetera. So the American River Parkway, as we look at it, is a flood control structure which also doubles as an important recreation area for the people of Sacramento. And there's important wildlife habitat, and of course there's the fisheries issues in the river. So we are trying to balance both of those. Now, what I'm about to say is going to sound kind of off. I don't want to defend the Army Corps of Engineers for their choices on the trees. I've served on committees in the past that have looked at this, and it was at the committees I was on and the things I was involved in, we felt it was overstated on the part of the Army Corps of Engineers to remove so many trees. It used to be that the policy was scorched earth. That was it. They didn't want a lick of vegetation anywhere on the levee because for good reason, they were worried about a variety of things that can happen when you have trees on levees. One is, of course, trees slow down the water. What you want is faster water, not slower water. And the big scary thing that people talk about is trees falling over and that root wad that's underneath the tree pulling a hole in the levee and causing the levee to fail. I mean, because leakage goes on through the levee, and then lots of vegetation on a levee is a problem because of something as mundane as squirrels. I mean, you have all kinds of burrowing wildlife that takes advantage of. Yeah, and now we have nutria just to make it worse. And don't forget, we have beavers in this system too, and they're problematic because they build dens in the side of levees. What the engineers want is basically, as they say, as close to scorched earth as you can get. You want a structure, which is an engineering structure, which is not disrupted by all this nature that's on it. But of course, it's this nature that's on it makes it great for us in this area to go up and down the river. Now, let me defend the Corps in that they are an engineering organization. They set engineering standards, and that's done at headquarters, not here. So these are their national standards for levees. And all levees that are basically within these flood control systems that are approved by the Corps have to meet these national standards. So somewhere, it's actually down in Louisiana, probably, they're setting the standards for the density of the number of trees that you can have on a levee. And that's it. You want your levee certified, across the board, you have to go by those standards, even though the standards may not entirely make sense. And I say this because in the engineering world, they engineer bridges, right? And when bridges fall down, they learn from what happened, they set new standards, and you do it that way, regardless of whether you could cut some corners or adjust things. So I am very sympathetic, especially these riparian trees, which are so important to us, as they're a community asset, to the people who are opposing this. I'm also kind of sympathetic to the Corps because they have to be able to set these standards and they have to meet these standards. It is very hard and should be very hard to vary the standards. Personally, as a scientist who's looked at it over the years, you could probably have a lot more trees on the levees than are currently being allowed, but I'm not the one setting the standards.
The Corps is also working to expand the Sacramento Weir.
Yeah, good idea.
Okay, because that's the first major upgrade and it's like more than 100-year history. So this is a pretty significant upgrade to flood control in the area.
Yes. And the beauty of the Sacramento Weir, for those who are familiar with it, it's on the right bank of the Sacramento River, above the confluence with the American River. And one of the problems that you have is that after the Gold Rush, when the early version of the Army Corps came in, they basically squeezed the Sacramento River down to this what is a very narrow channel compared to the volume that can flow on it. So think in the terms of that you can – when all everything is flowing – strong, the amount of water that's going down the Yolo Bypass is 3 or 4 times what's going down the Sacramento River. So connecting the river to the Yolo Bypass is absolutely essential. We would be wiped off the map here on a regular basis if it were not for the fact that they have 2 major weirs that basically push water out onto the Yolo Bypass. The Sacramento Weir has been a scary weir for a long time because it's old. It's falling up. It was falling apart. It's made of wood. It's made of wood. I mean, the technology was century-old technology. I mean, you literally got out there by hand and removed the wood to open it up. So a modern weir is a really good idea there, and a strengthened weir is a good idea because one of the things that happens with weirs, by the way, where they fail is they begin to erode around their edges at their abutments and the edges of them, and then the whole levee goes, and that's a problem. So they've run into some problems. I mean, this should surprise no one. You know, until you start building these things, you know, then you don't know what the soils are, really good handle on what's happening with the soils. So they've got some subsidence. They've got some technological challenges. That's going to delay building the weir. And oh, by the way, if you're building a big project like this? I always laugh about the joke we used to make, twice as long and twice as much. You know, whenever they tell you what it's going to be in the beginning, double the amount of time and double the amount of cost. And that's kind of actually played out here. I mean, everything is taking quite a long time to build because these are complicated structures and they're expensive and they're difficult. So I am not surprised. I really upgrading the Weir. I used to sit on the floodboard many, many years ago before I was fired with enthusiasm by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And that was one of the upgrades we had to have as that Weir.
Jeffrey, as always, Professor Mount, thank you for coming on Insight for 101.
I am a big fan of this show, so glad to be here.
Jeffrey Mount is a senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California's Water Policy Center, and we've been getting a sense of what flooding risks and protections look like across the Sacramento region, with winter just around the corner. Still ahead, we are ending today's show with an Insight tradition. Just in time for the holidays, we are pairing music from around the world with wine. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.